My name is Rachel, and we've got a very special guest on the line, Morena Dunstan Bruce of Chumbawamba and many other amazing projects. We're talking about a film this morning that's part of the Dock Edge Festival here in New Zealand. It's called I Get Knocked Down. How are you, Dunstan?
I'm fine, thanks. It's 10:30 in the evening here.
Oh, good evening to you.
Yes,
Whereabouts are you in the world at the moment?
I'm in Brighton in England.
Oh, lovely. Lovely part
on
of the country.
South Coast. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, it's very exciting to be talking about this. I really enjoyed this film. For context for the listeners, this is a documentary sort of, I guess it's like an art documentary because you use a lot of really interesting dramatic techniques in it. But it's exploring, I guess, the issue of Tub Thumpin' as a number one hit for Chumbawamba, what that sort of meant for you guys as an anarcho-punk band, and also what that meant for you as an artist now in your middle age and reflecting on activism and maybe some of those original ideas that you set out with as a band when you all sort of started off in your big punk squat back in the early days of the group. How did you decide to, I guess, tell this story through documentary? What made you want to do that, Dunstan?
I was determined that the story of Chumbawamba would not be lost in the annals of history and that we would just be regarded as a one-hit wonder. I thought it was important that the story of the whole band and the fact that we'd existed for 15 years before Tub Thumpin' was a hit was an important part of the story, and then to try and talk about what we tried to do as a political band when we were in that situation of having a hit single, you know, whether we could actually achieve anything. So it was an important story for me to tell that it didn't get lost.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing to watch because there'll be plenty of people who do know this about Chumbawamba, that you have these roots and as you were saying, throughout the whole, I guess, like peak of focus on your band through the sort of Tub Thumpin' era, you were always making these activist actions. You were doing a lot of really interesting political work, and maybe it registered with some people, maybe it didn't register with others, but it's a really interesting issue that's kind of core to this film. For folks who maybe aren't super familiar, what was the origin of Chumbawamba?
Of the band,
yeah,
or the name?
Of the band.
The band. We just all met in Leeds and were squatting in a house. We found this big old empty house that we all moved into that's in the film, basically. You see, I've got some really lovely early 8mm footage of us from back in the day. We all met up and we'd all come out of punk and post-punk and wanted to do something that was interesting and challenging and expressed our political views on the world, but using music, because we'd all been in bands in the past.
I think one of the things that I have always liked about Chumbawamba, but I think that comes through really strongly in the documentary, is that you used sort of theatricality and you used humour very much as a tool for passing these political messages or these sort of lofty ideals that you had as a band. And I think throughout the era of Tub Thumpin' being such an international hit, I mean, it was a number one here in New Zealand and in many other countries, that was still very much the core of what you're doing. And throughout this doco, we get to see a lot of footage of you performing pre-Tub Thumpin' and also during that time. What was the point at which you thought, okay, humour needs to be a tool for us? When did that kind of click?
Quite early on, actually, in the 80s, in the mid-80s, basically. We'd been following a band called Crass for quite a few years, who were very political and very confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt as though that way of presenting your political ideas was quite inward looking and would never talk to other people outside of a small scene. And we always wanted to be outward looking. We also thought that was a really important thing. That, in fact, in the film, I think there's a point where I say, you know, the converted can take care of themselves. We want to talk to the rest of the world. And that was always really important. And also, you know, shouting in someone's face is not going to change their mind.
No.
There's much, much better, more subtle, more interesting ways of trying to convince people that there are other points of view. And I think that's really relevant now in today's society, where everybody just seems to be shouting at each other and people have lost the ability to listen. And so I think it's quite an important message, and it was something that we tried to do, you know, right from the mid 80s, and that's why we combined it with theatre as well, because we thought that would be entertaining and would draw people in.
Yeah. Some of the footage that you were talking about there that you've got from the early days is amazing. I think there's a bit where Alice Nutt is dressed as a nun, maybe, with like you know, there's some incredible outfits you've got going on, televisions for heads and certain performances, lots of, you know, big reveals. You rip something off and there's something else underneath. It's a really, it looks like a really exciting time for you as artists and as young people trying to work out what you wanted as like a political message, because you changed what you wanted a lot, which I think is the right of anybody to decide and re-decide what they're standing for and how they're standing for it. When you were sort of making decisions as a group, was it easy to come to a consensus on what an idea was? Was it difficult? How did that kind of shake down?
What's interesting about everything that you're saying is that you're totally right about everything about the way that the band worked and, you know, how we did things. It wasn't always easy, you know, because what I tried to do in the film, what me and Sophie, the other co-director, tried to do in the film was like make the film be like Chumbawamba's back catalogue in a way that Chumbawamba never did the same album twice. We were always trying to change and always trying to do something different, and at times that was really challenging because you would do an album that you really loved. And then we'd just all sit down together to talk about what we were going to do next. And it'd be like, no, we're going to do an a cappella album now. And you'd be like, but I can't sing. Yeah. And they'd be, you know, it'd be like, well, that's irrelevant. You know, it's for the common good almost. And this is what we're going to do. And then you'll be on the next album, you know, and we'll still be doing stuff live and stuff. And so there was always that. It wasn't always a simple process, but it was always... What Chumbawamba was never boring. It was never, ever boring. It was always really interesting and fascinating and challenging. We challenged ourselves all the time. And I think we wanted to do that with our audiences as well.
Absolutely. And I think maybe one of the biggest challenges for some of your core audiences was when Tub Thumping got successful, because there's that whole sort of tall poppy conversation that happens within these communities about, okay, well, you've sold out now, you've hit the mainstream, you've signed to a record label. What was the... I've got two questions about Tub Thumping, I guess. The first one is, what led up to that moment? When did that song appear on the scene for you guys?
So I suppose that was about 95, 96, when we were working on a new album, and we had no idea that song was going to be as big as it was. We just thought we'd had a few songs in the past that had that sort of structure, you know, that had a chanty bit that we realized, you know, people liked, and, you know, and a bit of Lou singing, a bit of talking. It sort of had, you know, elements to Chumbawamba that always worked live.
Yeah.
And so we were just trying to do, you know, we were just trying to bring those elements together. So we didn't, but we never thought this is going to be a hit at any point. It was just, it was complete. That was a happy accident, I suppose.
And it was then quite an interesting time for you guys, because you did sign to EMI, and there's a bit in the documentary where you talk about how you'd actually been on a like anti-EMI compilation prior to that. So obviously there were tensions about this decision. Why did you guys decide, okay, we're going to try and be in this mainstream for a while as an anarcho-punk group? You never stopped being that, but why did you decide that was the decision to make?
Because in that scene, there's a line in it where it says, if you want to be part of popular culture, you've got to be popular. And I think as a group of people, we were always obsessed with popular culture. It was a really big thing for us. And we learned about punk through watching bands like the Sex Pistols and the Clash on television. Because we didn't grow up in London. We weren't part of that London scene. You know, it came north and we saw it, you know, via those sort of channels. And I think we thought, look, we've been given an opportunity to go and do something that we've never done before. So that in itself was a challenge. And I think we'd always thought, let's just take those risks and leap into the unknown, because we were stagnating before then, And I think we just wanted to do something different. And we always wanted to challenge ourselves and our audience. And they can make the decision whether they came with us. But we were always trying to do, we were always trying to move forward all the time with what we were doing. And of course, yeah, we were on a, I know it's a morning program, so we can't say what that album was actually called, but we were on an anti-AMI album.
It's after 9 o'clock, so you can say what you like now.
Right. And so it was really contentious that we then signed to EMI, yeah. But, you know, we did sit around for weeks and weeks discussing whether it was a good idea and what impact it would have. And how our audience would respond to a signing was not a good enough reason.
Yes.
It was not a good enough reason for us to do what we thought would be interesting and challenging for us.
I think one of the things that's so, I mean, Tub Thumping as a song it's endured for reasons that I think are many and varied, because as you say, as a tune, it's got all these elements that are catchy and anthemic, yeah. But actually the lyrics resonate with people, I think, whether they're thinking about it as a political message, as a working class anthem, or as some sort of personal mantra. And there's a very lovely bit right at the end of the film, which I just really enjoyed, where you've got a kind of like compilation of people's YouTube covers of Tub Thumping. And I just thought that was such a nice note to end on. It's kind of a homage to the way that a song becomes bigger than the sum of its parts. How do you feel about Tub Thumping now? Because it is quite... I mean, it must have been quite a tricky thing. That's the crux of this film, is how do you sort of continue as an activist when you've had something that people might want to try and reduce your career to?
We had to make a lot of decisions about, you know, when that song became a hit. Do we take that opportunity and try and do something really positive with it? Again, in the film, you know, I think I say in an interview at some point, I say, look, how often does anybody get that opportunity to speak to so many people and to have that platform? And it would just seem irresponsible to me to not take that opportunity, to not use that chance. Because as well as, you know, publicising things that we believed in and doing subversive things with when we appeared on television, we were also doing subversive things where we were giving money away, you know, to various organisations. So we were it felt as though we were helping people that were part of the scene that we were part of. So like, people could slag us off as much as they wanted for selling out, but I think at the same time, we thought we were doing a lot of good as well. You know,
I think that really comes through in this documentary. There's clips of you all on various talk shows where you are very much the only person in the room speaking up for what it is that you guys as a band stood for. You know, there's a lot of moments where you're talking about some of the kind of, you know, complicated things. I think there's a scene where you talk about people should nick the record if they can't afford it, you know. And it's
it was that we didn't mind if anybody, we didn't care if anybody stole the record.
Yeah. And there's just things like that where I think it was shocking for a lot of people, but also maybe liberating as well to hear those things. And as you said, you gave a lot of the money away. Tell us about the General Motors moment, because that was a really interesting thing, which maybe some people don't necessarily know about. What happened there?
Yeah, so, you know, like we used to get requests for the song all the time. And you know what's weird is that we still do.
Wow.
We still do, but it still happens today. But so there was a lot of things that we were turning down. And it just got to a point where we thought, look, maybe we could accept the money from General Motors and then give the money to do organizations. Because that money would just go to somebody else.
Yeah.
And so we did. So we accepted the money from General Motors for them to use the song in an advert. And then we then gave that money to an organization, Corpwatch, who monitored the bad working practices of companies like General Motors. And so we really liked the situationist nature of that. Yeah. It just seems like a good prank in a way that we sort of turned it on our heads and used that to like publicize something that we believed in, and we gave a lot of money to Indie Media at the same time, who were like a political news organization. So it just felt as though that was no skin off our nose. It was just a song in an advert, you know. Like at the end of the day, you know, it didn't really make any difference. We weren't so cool that we were so bothered about our reputation.
Yeah,
you know, we just wanted to do something positive.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I wanted to talk about the sort of later half of this documentary, where it kind of comes to the present day, and a big kind of issue in this film is working through, I guess you could call it a midlife crisis or a midlife activism crisis. What do you do in when you see sort of continuations of yeah. problems that you were fighting against as young people? And one thing that's really interesting is that you come back to music being the place for you to do that. Why is that, and how are you doing that now?
Do you know what, it's really weird. The making of the film and then doing Interrobang and now doing a one-man show, which is a thing I do now, is those sort of things helped me work through all of that, you know, what my role was, what I could do to contribute, how I could help, how I could be of any sort of influence. And you know what I found with doing Interrobang is what I remembered is how important just, you know, a gig atmosphere and venue is, you know, and how that creates so much energy, and it creates a place of community where you bring people, like-minded people together, and you realize you're not alone.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really powerful thing, and an important thing, you know, like, and I think I learned from the whole process that, you know, me just being creative and carrying on what I'm doing and talking about the things that I'm talking about, that in itself is like, it's being part of a, you know, a movement for change. It's like, you know, like I'm just advocating for those sort of things, and I'm supporting, you know, and talking about, you know, whether it's talking about, you know, like younger groups that are coming through. I mean, we only highlight a few in the film because it's impossible to cover, you know, everybody. But I think that's an important thing, that what I find really inspiring now is that there's a younger generation who are like really politicized. A friend of mine calls it Generation Left. And I think that's it's a brilliant idea that there's all these younger people that are like, who are sort of taking on the mantle.
Yeah.
And I identify with that because I was that person, you know, like 40 years ago. I think it's really good that I can be inspired by a younger generation now, because you're usually inspired by people who are older than you.
Yeah.
I think it's really great to like find a younger generation of people, of political activists and musicians who are doing something really positive.
Absolutely. Dunstan Bruce, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you this morning. Thank you so much for your time. For folks who are wanting to watch I Get Knocked Down, it's playing at the Capitol Cinema here in Tāmaki on the 17th of June at 6 p.m. And if you happen to have COVID at that time but you really want to go and see it, it's also going to be on the Dock Edge Festival's virtual cinema, so you'll be able to watch it from the 18th of June at your leisure on your computer as well. Dunstan, we're going to end with Give the Anarchist a Cigarette. Thank you so much for speaking with us. Have a nice evening.
Cheers, Sanju. Bye now.
Bye.
Albert. Woo! Bobby. Woo! For God's sake, burn it down. We'll be right back.
yourself. Every fire needs a little bit of help. Nothing ever burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit.
That is Chumbawamba with Give the Anarchist a Cigarette. Thank you so much to Dunstan Bruce for speaking with us this morning. I really enjoyed that chat. If you want to watch his fantastic documentary, I Get Knocked Down, it's part of the Dock Edge Festival. If you head over to the Dock Edge website, you'll be able to find all the details and links. But next Friday, is it next Friday? Maybe in two Fridays. When's the 17th? On the 17th of this month, at least. That is next Friday. It's going to be playing at the Capitol Cinema. You can get your tickets through the Dock Edge website as well. Shout outs to Rowan, who said that that's his favourite favourite Chumbawamba track. We've also had someone say they really love Dave Friedman's remix of Tub Thumpin'. It's ace. Honestly, that song has stood the test of time for many, many reasons, but also their whole catalogue is pretty incredible.